get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have guest Ryan Durrani. Now, if you've been keeping up with anything in the SEO space, you'll know Ryan was recently featured in the Business Insider article detailing how he went from working in an SEO agency to now making around $40,000 per month as a freelancer. So we cover some of his journey there, what he learned from his agency life that he was able to bring over to freelancing, how he was finding clients, how he's scaling, his day to essentially a day in the life of what his day looks like as a freelancer, as he's literally doing everything solo. So this will be interesting for those of you who may be doing things yourself as well. We then dive into one of his new projects, which is an affiliate site. So many people are always asking, you know, if you're working doing SEO for all these other sites, why aren't you doing it for yourself? So he's taken on essentially that role now, and he's now got his own affiliate site, and we cover his processes from keyword research, writing content, links, internal linking, and everything in between. So sit down and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show, and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today, we have the now big dog, Ryan Durrani. How are you going, Ryan?
I'm good, mate. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. So people who may not have seen, I would love for you to cover what was in that Business Insider article, essentially covering how you went from SEO agency working there now to making around $40,000 a month as a freelancer.
Yeah, it's been a journey, I can tell you that for sure. I was just like everybody else, dude. It seems like everybody else anyway. I had the kind of ambition to, you know, build my own business way back when, like when I was like 25, 26. And I never knew what I wanted to do. But I was in a fortunate position where I kind of built this career at an agency, working in SEO. And I eventually just made the decision during COVID to launch my own business. And I focused purely on inbound marketing, took it from 0 to 10 to 20 to 30 to now, as you see, 40K a month in the last 16 months.
Nice. All right. So let's dive maybe a little deeper into that as well. Mm-hmm. So what made you leave, I guess, the agency life and do your own thing to start essentially freelancing?
Yeah. I think a couple of things. One, I knew the revenue opportunity was a lot bigger. I think people don't realize how much money is out there to be made until you make that decision to go freelance. And two, I was kind of getting bored of not bored, but potentially overwhelmed by the agency world. It's quite hectic. There's a lot to balance. There's a lot of politics to navigate. And that was really the catalyst to kind of drive me out and do my own thing.
Did you cover a lot of the skills in the agency work that translated over to you freelancing, or did you have more of a specific role within that agency?
Yeah, I think the most transferable skill, to be honest, from the agency was being able to communicate and being able to basically reinforce your value as an SEO. I think at an agency, you get taught everything. So you're not really a specialist so much. You kind of become a broad marketer. But I took a real love and passion for on-page content growth, content play. So that's really where I've kind of carved out my place in the market right now.
As a freelancer, that's kind of where you've considered your specialty, where you've kind of specialized down that route?
Yeah, exactly. I'm good at it, so I know I can get the most value out of it in terms of what I get paid for and what I give back. So that's kind of where I sit right now, yeah.
Perfect. So you leave the agency and you go essentially down your own route. Did you have, I guess, a safety net in terms of income coming in, or you went from agent basically a salary to nothing?
Yeah, I went from a salary to nothing. It was scary. I could tell you it was very scary. I had a little bit of savings and yeah. I had also did like a few side projects while I was employed. But I went from stable income to zero overnight. And it's,
so it's like, it's, burn the boats. You're like David exactly. Goggins over there.
Yeah. You got to be the toughest man in the room kind of thing. And it was like, I have to survive at this point. So it kind of forces you to do it.
So then how long did it take you to, I guess, land your first paying client then? Did you have a lot of time where you were eating your ramen noodles in there, or were you a pretty quick transition?
Dude, I'm still eating ramen noodles now. I think it took me 30 days to get my first £2,000 a month client. So yeah, the ramen noodles were there. It was pretty quick.
And they're still going strong.
Yeah, the ramen noodles were there. They're a staple in any freelancer's diet, I'm telling you, man.
So I'm sure there's a lot of people listening as well who may be in agency life or maybe in their own freelance journey, wondering how you've managed to pick up all these clients, essentially, to scale to 40K. What is, I don't want to say the secret, but let's just call it the secret. What is that secret to being able to land these clients? Is it just basic outreach? Is it going through the network you already had? Is there something else there?
I think the secret is two things: understanding your worth, firstly, and secondly, staying true to that with consistency over a period of time. So, I didn't have a real network, but what I did have is a quite a solid resume of clients that I had worked on, which I leveraged, and I did no outreach, no cold out emailing or anything like that. I literally gave away everything I was doing for free on LinkedIn for months, and that's how I scaled it.
Okay, so you use LinkedIn as almost like your lead generation tool there.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Gotcha. Did having previous clients at the agency help you, I guess, define those clients initially? Do you think it would have worked if you didn't have that previous network?
Good question. I think it would have been a lot harder for me to go for the budgets that I work with if I didn't have that resume of clients I'd worked with. In terms of like figuring out what kind of clients I wanted to work with when I was a freelancer, I had already known, I knew that from the start. It was just, I think that helped me accelerate it.
And then the leverage you had, so if anyone listening, maybe they're wondering what kind of leverage you had to essentially land these clients. What are we talking about? Are we talking about maybe previous clients you've worked with or previous budgets and things like that?
Probably both. I was in a fortunate position. I had worked with like six-figure budgets per month. And I had also worked with some of the biggest clients or some of the biggest brands in the UK in terms of like revenue and brand awareness. So yeah, I think both of them definitely worked in my favor.
Oh, that's perfect. So if we move into essentially your freelance journey now, do you have a team now that essentially works for you as part of your freelance to help you essentially scale your business?
This shocks a lot of people, but no, I don't.
So everything solo?
Everything is solo, yeah. you can imagine what that looks like at like 20-30k a month. So yeah, running the business is all me. The consulting side of thing is all me. What I do have is elements that I outsource. So like content writers or link builders, I will outsource that. And the clients I work with typically have in-house developers or marketers or teams to get stuff done. They just rely on me to kind of provide the strategy, the direction, and guide on execution. So quite lucky in that sense.
Damn, okay. Give me a day in the life then of Ryan Durrani, who is full solo freelance, making this much money, doing it yourself.
Ah, dude. Okay, so day in the life, without fail, every single day, a coffee, iced coffee, hazelnut latte. Remember that. It's a staple. I'm up maybe at my desk by 8 a.m. And it's like emails, catching up on Slack messages, going over content that I've had back, checking growth on client sites. And then I am probably for the rest of the day in calls. So back-to-back calls.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So essentially the morning is the only time that you can really nail down work that you need to do for the clients.
Yep. Pretty much. And then I spend the rest of the day telling them how they do it in their teams. Okay.
Damn. Okay. So then how do you, I'm just trying to think it. So obviously we know that time isn't scalable. So how do you then scale, I guess, how did you scale to this? And then how do you scale further? Do you have a plan to get further? Obviously, you know, you can't keep giving more and more time, is only so much time in a day. So is it a matter of now starting to hire a team?
I mean, I kind of made a promise to myself that I wouldn't turn into an agency. Like, I wanted to not do that. But I think like you said, you know, time isn't scalable. And if I wanted to double or triple my income in the next 3 years, 5 years, it's like, it's inevitable. I'm going to have to employ people or figure out ways that I can get time back. So the plan for me is to drive revenue to about 100K a month. And along with that, you know, I'm sure there'll be a ton of growing pains with it, but along with that, I'm sure I'm going to have to bring people along the way with me.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
How will you decide what you delegate out? Because obviously freelance, you do everything solo, you trust the way you do your own work. I think most people maybe within their content sites or niche sites don't want to outsource too much because it's like their little baby, you know, they don't want to tell someone else maybe do work that isn't as good. So delegating becomes, I guess, this hard thing of, you know, I don't want to give away control. So how did you decide what you're giving away? And in the future, how will you decide what you'll delegate out?
That's a good question, because I'm really protective of my work. Like, I'm terrible, dude. Yeah. Like, you know, Craig, he will vouch for this. Yeah. I do not trust people. So I think the way you have to learn to delegate is to get out of your own way and drop the ego and realize that you're not the only person capable of doing the stuff that you can do. And if there are knowledge gaps, you should have like an SOP in place to iron those knowledge gaps out. My biggest resource suck is content. But it's what I'm most skilled in. So I can SOP that out. I can train people on that pretty effectively. And I think that is where most of my, in the future, most of my delegation will sit.
Okay, gotcha. Regarding those SOPs, I'm in the process of trying to create my own as well. It's not fun to do, obviously. How have you made your series? I mean, I've heard people that will just do Loom videos, Word documents, screenshots, whatever. Do you have a process for that?
Yeah, I'm in the mix. So I like to have a Loom video, but I'll also document it, which is, I think, two lots of work, but I don't know why I do it. But yeah, Loom is such a lifesaver. Like, I think it's, what, $7 a month and you can record unlimited videos. Definitely get that for SOPs.
Perfect. So then within the SOP, then you're essentially doing almost like an over the shoulder of what you're doing and they just follow along?
Exactly. And I think what I try to do as well is incorporate some like common errors they're going to come across or common challenges they're going to come across. So I'll go, this is how you do it, but if this happens or X happens, here's how you can kind of get around that. So they're not just kind of watching me do a seamless from start to finish content strategy. I'll also say, oh, if this goes wrong or this happens, then this is how you deal with it and this is how you fix it.
Oh, nice. Okay. I'm gonna remember that for mine.
Take it, it's yours.
Yeah. I want to dive into a little bit as well in terms of how you charge, I guess, your clients. You don't have to go into money and too much detail here, but kind of how, is it kind of like a monthly retainer or monthly subscription they pay you, or is it based on maybe they pay a lump sum for a certain amount of work and then you come back to them?
I would say 95% of my business is retainer based. So they pay me to deliver results and I will basically work out what that's going to cost me to produce those results. In the very rare occasion, I will do like a 3-month project. They'll pay me 50% up front. And then when the project's finished, I'll collect the remaining 50%.
Gotcha. That works. And I also wanted to cover within this agency, I'm sure there's people maybe working in an agency or maybe working some other job who are looking to go solo. What advice would you have for them to make that move?
Ooh. Don't want to sound like one of those like guru guys. Like, yeah.
Just follow your dreams.
Follow your dreams. Hard work pays off. I would say like the strongest piece of advice I can give if people are looking to genuinely do this is if you can, and it is find the time to build a business whilst you're working. And whether that is you're building your personal brand or you're building your network or whatever it is. But when you make that transition, if you've already got a little bit of momentum, it's a lot easier to kind of follow that on rather than to start from the beginning and try and build up. That would be the best advice I can give.
Nice. Actually, you mentioning personal brand. Reminded me, I think it was a podcast of yours that I listened to. I must have been with the Craig's one, recent one, I think, about building your own personal brand.
Yeah.
What's the importance of building that personal brand and how are you going about it?
I think the most important thing that I've tried to do is to remain as honest and as transparent as I can. I think can we swear on this or no?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, I think people's bullshit detectors are really, really high because people have been missold stuff. They've been promised things that they can't achieve. And so I think the most important thing with a personal brand is that you are 100% you. Like, this is who I am day in, day out. And if you're going to build it on a platform that you're comfortable on and that where your audience is. Like, for me, it was LinkedIn. That's where I started building my personal brand because it was what I was used to. But if you're, you know, already pretty familiar with Twitter, do it on there. And I would give one bit of advice is steer clear of poking the bear too much. If you want to kind of remain like you want to stay in people's good books as you build your personal brand in the early days.
What's some examples of poking the bear then? Basically some examples not to do.
I could very easily go on rants about how agencies are terrible and agencies suck just to kind of make myself look better, but it's not true. And I could end up burning bridges with people that might eventually want to work with me. So like, that's a perfect example.
Yeah, that's a good call. I want to move on to your own affiliate niche sites. Obviously, people always ask, you know, you're freelancing, you're doing these things for other businesses, you're working in an agency, whatever, why aren't you doing it for yourself? And I know you've just started recently a couple of sites. So maybe do you want to run through maybe the thought process of how you started it? Maybe you don't have to share the niche, but maybe general topic, and then maybe some of your process and thought process through that.
Yeah, so exactly that. Like, you know, I've been doing SEO for a long time, and I've always been doing it for other people and made people a lot of money. So, and hanging around dudes like Craig and some of the other bigger affiliates that I know, I'm like, there is huge amounts of money to be made, and the process is exactly the same. So I started a content site in an outdoor sports niche, which is a hobby of mine. And like, the process was brand new domain. Let's see how quick I can get it to $1,000 a month. And let's see how quick I can sell it based on all of the things I know.
All right, let's go. Let's dive a little deeper into this. Let's start with, you've got the topic. Yep. Let's start with the keyword research process. How are you finding essentially the keywords? What's your process? Are you going, do you have a certain, I guess, publishing order? Are you going from low competition to high competition? You're just covering everything? Does it matter?
Yeah, so I work from the ground up. I do keyword research in buckets. So if a niche is super broad, which this one is, I will hone in on one topic first, and I will mass produce content for that topic. So like, let's say it's protein powders. I will go all in on isolate whey, and then I will move on, and then I will move on again. Because it helps me. I'm pretty OCD. Like, I like to get something done, get it finished, and then move on. So that's pretty much my process with keyword research.
Have you tried, I guess, well, have you even compared maybe doing, say, 10 or so articles on one topic and 10 on another, 10 on another, and kind of publishing it that way? Have you found that makes a difference at all? Or you just like doing everything on that one topic at once?
Yeah, I think kind of history has helped me understand, like, if you dominate a certain category quickly and you start to generate traffic for that particular category, when you start branching out into shouldering topics on your site, because you're generating traffic and things are moving and Google's coming back a lot, it makes the next category a lot easier to get through and to get rankings out of. So I've tried everything, like with every client. I've tried different publishing methods. I've tried different keyword research methods, but it always comes back to dominate a topic, then move on. And it's always been most effective for me.
Nice. And you mentioned as well at the beginning about how content and on page is kind of like your little area of specialty.
Yeah.
How are you then structuring your articles for these? Maybe in terms of headings, any FAQs or anything like that?
Yeah, so I basically, what I'll do is I'll set my keyword research, my titles, they're already set. And then I will just produce content briefs for each individual title. I don't think I do anything groundbreaking in terms of on page. So like my subheadings are normally keyword variations, or I'll take something from Phrase or Surfer and build out basically like just a list of questions. So, you know, isolate whey, what is it? How is it applied? Like, does it help me lose weight? All of that stuff. I don't really do FAQs at the bottom of the page. I try and answer the questions throughout.
Okay.
And if I need an FAQ, I'll do it. But I normally keep those for like product pages or like an affiliate money page or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So if you had, say, something from People Also Asked on Google that was relevant to your info topic, you'd make that essentially like an H2 heading and try to answer that.
Pretty much. And the same with like related searches. If I go into image search and there's anything in there that's relevant, like you can sometimes get some good entities out of there, like in the little bubbles in the images. Anything that crops up that I think is relevant, I'll pull into a H2. And I don't really go too deep in nesting headings. Like H3 is probably the maximum I'll go to. Yeah. I try my best to answer like a H2 heading as quickly as possible. So I try and like target those snippets, you know, and make everything a little bit easier for the crawlers.
How do you decide then what is going to be a related topic as an H2, or what will be a separate article? If it's, say, a smaller topic, say People Also Ask, that maybe only needs a paragraph, Would you still write that as an H2 or H3 and then also do a separate article on it? Or would you kind of just combine it all into one article?
I mean, I'll just do like a quick eyeball of the SERPs. So if that H2 comes back and the intent says that it deserves its own article, then I'll do that. But if I search the H2 or the people also ask into Google and the same intent, like the primary keyword comes back, I'll just include it in the article and leave it at that.
No, gotcha. That makes sense. All right, let's maybe move a little bit into how old is your site now?
It was launched at the start of January.
Okay, so very new. And what are the stats at like now?
So we're doing about 150 visits a month.
Dude, that's quick.
Yeah.
And how many articles on there?
I believe it's 30 articles right now.
Wow. Okay, nice. Have you done any off-page work on that? Getting various links or anything like that to start with? Or are you kind of waiting till you load the content on?
Yeah, so for the first, I would say, 45 days, I just put content on, worked on the internal linking structure and did nothing else. And from day 45 onwards, I did like all of your foundational link building profiles, like socials, GMB setup, just to build that entity around the site. And I've done two things. I managed to land guest posts in this niche pretty easily because it's not like a super tapped out niche. And I tried automation as well. So I sent thousands of links at this site to see what would happen, to see if it would break, if it would blow up. And nothing bad's happened.
So far, so good.
Yeah. Okay. I probably shouldn't say that.
Yeah, Google will listen to this soon and come find your site. Okay, interesting. So what's the plan going forward then with, I guess, the off page? Are you planning to continue on guest posting? Are you factoring in anything like link velocity or anything like that? Or is it just a matter of, you know, what you can get is, you know, what you do?
I mean, thankfully the competition is quite low, so I'm not too concerned about how quickly I build those links out, because I've already looked at these guys' link profiles and there's nothing special behind them. So I know if I was like, say, 50 super relevant high authority links, I'll probably win the niche. But my plans are to go a little bit above that and kind of introduce PR and see what I can do with it and see if like a smaller amount of PR links actually will outweigh, say, 20 or 30 super good guest posts. So the plan is to keep it, apart from like the 1,000 automation links, is to keep it as white hat as possible.
So how do you structure then your PR campaigns? A very general question, but yeah.
I think a lot of people overthink PR, and you know, generally most of the most successful PR campaigns are data driven, and especially here in the UK, there's like tons of free data sources that you can pull data from. And there are a couple of tools you can use, like Buzzstream, Help a Reporter Out, Pitchbox if you've got the money to do it. And you can pitch this data out to all of the journalists that you want to get access to. And as long as you've got the money and the like a solid angle and a good amount of unique data, you should be fairly good.
I guess you could say it's similar to kind of like a skyscraper technique, but you're just kind of using the data, then doing your outreach with journalists.
Yeah, I would say that. That's a fair comment, yeah.
So that would be different then to someone going out and buying press releases as a way of doing PR. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. And then you also mentioned about your internal linking structures when you started. So how did you, I guess, did you plan the internal links before starting the site, or is it you start publishing and then you look to where you're going to internal link?
Yeah, I start before I publish anything. Like, my internal linking structure is already mapped out pretty solidly. And if I need to change anything, then it's not a big deal. But excuse me, traditionally I will have that ready to go by the time publishing comes around. So when I launch the content, everything's already connected how I want it to be.
Okay. So with the internal links then, how are you deciding the anchor text of these things? Are you just going all exact match to, you know, whatever page it is, or variations? Do you have kind of a general rule you follow?
Yeah, I mean, I like to keep it as natural looking as possible, and I try to tap as many keyword variations as possible of that keyword in my anchor text. Just to get some like diversity and try and expand that topical coverage of the page. So I might use a few exact match, but very rarely, and then I'll just diversify my profile.
Yeah, it's nice. I was just talking to Charles Float yesterday about that, and he mentioned the same thing about using a lot of variations within the internal linking. So I'm gonna have to start doing that now.
Yeah. Are you just like solid exact match?
Yeah, I've just been going straight exact match to my page, and I'm like, yeah, shit, I think I've been doing it wrong then. But good to know.
Yeah.
So then with I guess the links that you're buying, guest posts, niche or whatever, you doing the same thing then, where you're going more keyword variations than going exact match or branded or whatever?
So I've kept all of my first round of links completely branded or branded plus a keyword.
Is that to the homepage? Happen.
Yeah, so predominantly to the homepage, and I've tapped a few inner pages. With what I'm trying to do basically is build out the brand association to my keyword profile. So the name of the site plus keywords. So I do that as much as I can in the early stages, and then I might switch it up a little bit later.
Ah, interesting. Okay, so you're trying to rank for a main keyword. So to do that, brand plus that main keyword linking to your homepage.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
Okay, interesting. And then with the links to your inner pages, are you ever linking to money pages, or is it mainly just a supporting content?
So like, I traditionally, with my linking structure, because my internal links are really solid and like there's no wiggle room in them, I will usually power from the bottom up. And I think it works really well in low comp or mid comp niches if you do it that way. And then in super high comp niches, you're gonna obviously need to hit some at your money page. But one thing I learned really from Craig is leveraging the tiered links system. So if I send four links or four guest posts to a money page, I will put links beneath those to power it all up rather than risk my site.
I was talking to Charles about that as well, just the other day, about the tier link building. It's interesting because it's not often talked about, I guess, within even, I guess you could say, SEO courses or just generally on Twitter and things like that. It's just more, you need links to your site, but people don't mention that there are other ways of doing it, like this tiered link building way. So if you're going, I guess, doing a tiered link building campaign, how are you structuring it from, I guess, that tier one, what are you looking for and looking at doing? And then tier two, what are you looking for? And then what are you looking at doing there?
So I think tier one is basically the safest link that you can get. So if you've got, say, $1,000 to get some decent links, I would go after super high quality guest posts, or even if you've got money to get some PR links, some Harrow links, spend like 70% of your budget on your tier one. And then beneath that, you can go after some, you know, not as good quality niche edits, something with traffic, something that will still power up relevancy to your tier ones. But if anything goes wrong, that's getting burnt and not my site.
Yeah, so I'm almost like a buffer page or a safety net there.
Exactly, man. Yeah, exactly.
So then are you, to keep the relevancy then, are you using maybe your branded or, I guess, more natural anchor text from the tier one to your page, and then more exact match keyword from the tier two to the tier one?
Yep, exactly. I want my I want my anchor profile to look as natural as possible. My tier twos, I could go as over optimized as I need to, or I can push the boundaries as much as I need to, because I know, you know, within a boundary, of course. I don't want to damage anybody's site on purpose, but I will exact match to that site, and if that page doesn't rank on the tier two, it doesn't matter, because it's not my site. But ultimately, that juice is still being passed, and that's all I care about.
Do you ever go as low as tier three, like blasting your automations on that?
No. That's some mad scientist stuff. Like,
you just got automation straight to the money site. That's the secret.
Yeah, I'm all out.
Oh, nice. So I guess, what's the future plan with the site to get it to grow? So you currently have 30 posts. I guess, what's the trajectory of maybe number of posts per month, links per month, and things like that?
So we are aiming for 30 posts a month for the rest of the year.
Okay.
So we are hopefully ending the year by maybe 300-ish posts on the site. Link-wise, I haven't really set a number. I'm going to go after as much as I need to power those 300 posts. And I think by keeping it as clean as possible, it's going to make it a much easier sell when we do come to sell the site. So that's kind of my play.
Do you have a ratio of money versus info content on there, or you're looking to make it maybe pure affiliate and go more money site, more money content?
It is predominant. I've seen sites get absolutely battered by going the wrong way and being too heavy on like money sites and best of and best this. And I are on the side of caution. So I'm like 80% info.
Mm.
And then maybe 20% best list kind of content to get affiliate from.
Does that mean your monetization angle is mainly display ads then?
It will be, I would say, the biggest portion of it. Then, without giving away too much, the affiliate side of things is going to be really difficult because some of the laws where I live. But yeah, it will be predominantly display ads.
Okay, so are we saying this is more gray hat then, or are we?
I mean, I'll leave people's imagination. I would.
No.
I would say it's niche enough to be considered gray hat, and some of the perceptions of this niche are definitely those borderline between like unsafe.
Gotcha. Okay. So you've got, will you only stick to affiliate display ads as your monetization options, or are you looking at maybe branching out into digital products and things like that too?
I had considered trying to do like a kind of like a staged progression with it. So content, affiliate, and then becoming a wholesaler for this particular product. So actually growing it into an e-com site. And I think if we go to sell the site at a certain stage and we get no interest in it and it's just not going for what I think it's going to go for, then I think at that point I will try and flip it into an e-com site and then maybe look for a bigger exit 3 or 5 years down the line.
It actually interests me, that e-com site, because I'm thinking about potentially expanding my site to do a little bit of e-com too. If you're going to go down that route, how would you set up the e-commerce site? Would you look to just attach like a bolt on a Shopify store, or would you go kind of try to keep everything on WordPress with say WooCommerce or something like that?
Well, yeah, I would try and keep my site as clean as possible in that sense. So I would probably just, I mean, it's on WordPress, so I would probably just look to rejig it and add a shop into the current setup rather than bolt something on separately, rather than try and risk the work that I had done to keep the rankings as they are. That's the safest route.
Yeah. And then the idea would be essentially to swap out your number one in your affiliate articles for that item that you're selling? Would that be the plan?
Yep, pretty much. I think as well, if I say for the next 6 months, build up a good reputation with these, if I do get to land in this affiliate world, if I start to become a threat, then it makes the potential of me being bought out much higher.
Oh, that's true. That's true, actually. No, this is, I think we've actually covered pretty much everything from your agency life and your freelancing through to your affiliate sites now. If anyone's looking to maybe read up on a bit about your journey, follow you with the things you're sharing, anything like that, where can they reach you?
The best places to find me, you can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably where I'm most active. I can't remember my profile, but if you search for Ryan Durrani on LinkedIn, there's probably only one of me on there.
You can send them to me. I'll get them to link it in the description.
Okay, cool. So LinkedIn, Twitter, and also RyanDurrani.com. If you want to check out the site, it's not been touched in like a year, but it's embarrassing. But that's where that's where you can find me.
Perfect. All right. Thanks for coming on, Ryan. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. No, thank you, mate. It was good to chat.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.